the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty.
Mr. Seitz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. First, I know we're starting a little bit late here today, and this is kind of my fault because we had a long closed session. We did meet in closed session with our special legal counsel. One was Joe Shoulder as regards to the United States Bankruptcy Court proceedings. We heard an update from our attorney, but the board took no reportable action. But we did have a comment that I might take the liberty of responding to, something about a timeline for bankruptcy completion. That's the plan for reorganization that was question was asked about that before we went into closed session. And I want the everybody to know that one of the key issues on this plan for reorganization is going to be that ultimately the county's decision as to whether or not to take the wastewater treatment project. So I think as soon as February or January rolls around, I think we'll start to see real progress on the reorganization plan, what properties they're going to use, what properties they're not going to use, et cetera. They're all kind of material to the reorganization plan. We did hear then. We also had a conference with Eric Schindler, who is our special legal counsel on our lawsuit against the insurance companies on the duty to defend. We did hear an update. September 15th, there's going to be a key motion before the court down in Los Angeles. We have filed a motion for summary judgment. That's set for the 15th on the duty to defend. So hopefully we'll have something to report. Now, just because it's on September 15th, I think people that are familiar with litigation, that doesn't mean you get a decision on the 15th. It means you've had the hearing on the 15th. So as soon as we hear the court's decision on that, then we will, of course, report that out. We really did not get to the personnel issues. We did spend about, I don't know, 5 minutes on that because the items on the top on litigation took so much time. The board may or may not, depending on when this meeting adjourns, return to closed session on that item. So that's the report out of closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. First item on the agenda tonight would be administrative and committee reports, and we will ask for the district general manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. The general manager has spent, number one, was gone for 5 days out of the last 10 days at work on vacation. For the other 5 days that I was here, we spent primarily preparing for this meeting, spending time with Wallace Group, going over the various iBank contracts, and being prepared to hopefully answer your questions here this evening. In addition to that, I did attend a ISJ meeting with staff, with council, and the fact that that has now been signed and is official means that the group is eagerly looking forward to making progress starting the various tasks.
To add to your report, from a couple emails, I don't know if you had time or not, but I had asked some questions to be part of your report as far as what is the total on the taxpayer watch lawsuits. Do you have at least a round number or numbers for me?
We have spent, we believe, in the neighborhood of $200,000 on the taxpayer watch public waste case. Now, that's not including all the other funds that have been expended on other issues the taxpayers watch has raised over the years. We will get a final answer for that tomorrow. But we know exactly what we've gotten from Shute Mihaly. What we're reviewing is what we spent to Burke Williams.
Okay. And that doesn't include any of the staff time that was helping me to prepare
things. Just the legal bills.
Just that. Okay. Thank you. And then
I actually ran across numbers. I was sifting papers this weekend, and in May, we had racked up 230, I think it was. So then we can add June and probably July on top of that. It's a little above that now. But that, yeah, that was what it was in May, the last time we had it added up.
It's safe to say that it's exceeded what we in fact paid Burke Williams, which was about $215,000.
Yeah, we paid Burke Williams and Sorensen about $216,000.
$216,000 on the settlements.
And so now we're over that amount. Okay, and then I wanted to ask, we had some board direction last week about a letter to the county.
Correct.
What's the status of that?
The president signed it tonight. The unsigned copy is in your board information packet.
Any other questions? Okay. I attended the NEP Executive Committee meeting last Wednesday, and while there I found out that the county, and maybe I just don't remember hearing this before, I don't know when it was approved, but they have a grant from Fish and Wildlife Service for $300,000 to complete the HCP. Any news, any correspondence, anything to update on that?
The only thing I've seen on that was an article in the newspaper in the Bay News several months ago, and I did call the county, and I believe I let you all know that the county did get that. But that's they aren't talking to us. I don't know what their plans are. They are going in for more grants. I do know that. And then we're hopeful, they are hopeful that they'll get even more grants.
They're going in for say that again?
They're applying for even more grants.
Oh, more grants. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. So nothing from the Coastal Commission or the county or anybody about Tri-W and fence or all quiet? Okay. Any other committee reports or outside contacts anybody has to share?
The Water Finance, well, I think we'll next meet on September the 10th. And I guess one other item, I had a question for Mr. Schimpf earlier that he responded to, and maybe he could update. I just noticed it because the State Water Board's approving, reapproving their yearly priority list.
The district was looking at multiple projects, including some drainage-related for that corridor. Of course, that's not grant funds, it's loan funds, and in order to actually do a project, you'd have to have a source of revenue to repay that that dollar amount. So it's, in my opinion, some future issue, but nothing we're working on actively right now. We could probably inform them that they can remove us from the list unless the board's wanting to talk about it further. Old stuff.
Thank you. Okay, then we're on to the consent calendar. And we have four items on the consent calendar. Receiving administrative and committee reports, approve prior meeting minutes, approve the warrant register for July 2008, and approve the memorandum of understanding for cost sharing with the ISJ working group in accordance with tasks 2, 1, 2, and 3 of the work program approved by the board of directors on June 5, 2008. Do we have any public comment on the consent calendar at this time?
Is anything being pulled?
Director Sparks?
Sorry, Mr. President. I'm going to pull agenda item 5.
Okay, public comment on the consent calendar, please, and administrative and committee reports.
I'd like to pull item 6, too, since we have Mr. Miller here tonight.
Oh, I was going to speak on that, but since you're pulling it, I'll wait until.
This is your opportunity. You can comment on that.
Okay.
Yeah, we've already pulled it, I guess.
Well, normally I'd like to hear what the director has to say first since it's being pulled. Isn't that correct?
Don't necessarily have to, but we will.
I'd like to hear why it was pulled first.
Okay. All right, on any of the items that haven't been pulled.
Alon Perlman, Prohibition Zone. And is it proper to speak about the budget at this time in general?
The items I just mentioned were on the consent calendar. We're in consent calendar. We're not on general public comment.
No,
there is really no
general
public comment tonight. This is a special meeting.
Okay, I'll put in. There's no general comment to do?
No, this is a special meeting. It's our second of the month.
Right. Well, I did ask you about general public comment earlier.
I didn't realize that it was, you know, you caught me as I was walking
absolutely
out of our closed session.
And okay, in that case, I will actually. What I would be speaking about are two items relating to the budget. One has to do with the drainage is that something I can
That's,
talk about?
We've got administrative and committee reports, prior meeting minutes. Those are the two items left on the consent calendar at this time.
So when would I be able to speak?
The general manager's report. It was my understanding that at the last meeting, Mr. Shemp was going to come back with the corrections or what the reasons were for the errors in the utility manager's report. Was that going to be part of his general manager report? Because I don't see it anywhere else on the agenda. Okay, somebody follow up on that. And then, did I hear right that you're at $250,000 for the current and $216,000 was spent with Burke Williams? So we're almost at a half a million for the... No? Okay.
Can I correct him real quick?
Just yes.
So that your comments have continuity.
Right.
$216,000 was paid in of the $488,000 settlements in 05.
Right.
And that's what's being disputed by the Taxpayers Watch lawsuit that now has cost us $250,000 to defend.
In total between Burke Williams Sorensen and the new council?
Yes.
Okay. So it's at 250.
And it's climbing.
Right. No, I understand that.
Okay.
Then, you know, I've stated this before. I think if someone's running for office, they should be at these meetings. And again, we only have two of the candidates that are running this fall here in the room, Milan Perlman and Dave Dugan. You have, you know, Maria Kelly, Marshall Ohilski, and Karen Vendetti are not here. Dealing with the general manager's report on the lawsuits and the cost, I find that kind of ironic considering, you know, the literature that, as an example, Maria is putting out. One of her first bullet points is she wants to correct the high administration expenses for legal fees. Well, you know, how can somebody who wanted to dissolve the CSD...
We're getting into electioneering, it seems.
No, we're not. I'm making a public comment about, you know, Taxpayer Watch. It's obvious that a member of Taxpayer Watch who's caused, you know, that group has caused part of the problem we're in now was just discussed by the general manager, the total
yes,
fees.
It was.
Well, I'm making the comment that I find it ironic that then that group or that person or anybody from that group is not here in the room when this is probably the biggest thing in front of you right now, the effect of these costs on the district and the future services that this district can provide to maintain fire protection, emergency services, and you know, a safe water supply. I think people need to be in the room if they're going to run for office and stand for something, and then be hypocritical in the advertising they're putting out there. Thank you. And if we could get an answer to the water ops.
Yes, we did ask for corrections to the production numbers, I believe. Yes.
Yes. The utility manager and myself have been overlapping, or not overlapping, over the last 2 weeks. So we will make
five.
Well, she did that.
At the very end, she did slip that in.
Minus. Are you seconding it then?
Then I'll second.
Could we have a roll call, please?
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Schicker?
Yes.
Director Sparks?
Yes.
Vice President Tacker?
Yes.
President Sesenia?
Yes. And I don't think your microphone was on.
Mr. President, yes. Just a point of order. We have some interested people, parties here on the ISJ, and then, so I'm wondering if maybe we could move 5 to the back of the agenda today so that we can get to item 6 would be relevant, so that we can do those items, item 6 and item general action B, to allow them to leave. And then go to the other items.
I think that's a fair request. We'll take, well, okay, 5. Who knows how long that'll take. So we'll move on to item 6 on the consent calendar.
And Mr. President, I just pulled it because Mr. Miller's here, and I wanted a quick summary of his take on what's going on. Mr. Seitz or anybody. Just a quick overview for the public.
Thank you, Mr. President. A quick overview is that at long last the court has approved and signed the interlocutory stipulated judgment, also known as ISJ. That's basically an interim agreement between the purveyors where we agreed to work together towards basin management. And one of the very first set of steps relates to giving timely input into the wastewater project so that the water management that comes out of that project is meaningful to our basin. We can use that to balance the basin. And so there's a set of 3 tasks that were approved by your board in June. And in order to fund those tasks and do the nuts and bolts of splitting out the cost in accordance with our agreement, the district share is about 39, it is 39%, so less than half. The county, Golden State Water Company, and S&T Mutual Water Company are the other participants. In order to reasonably split that out, the consultants will be working with Golden State's attorney, and then they'll take those bills and they'll split it out and manage that process. Also part of this memorandum of understanding is an agreement among the consultants that the work products are owned by the ISJ parties, and we couldn't go out and use them for other purposes without the permission of those parties. So that's an important item as well. The Board of Supervisors was actually one of the first parties to consider the MOU that's before you, and they approved it about a week and a half ago. And so we'll be potentially next, depending on how your board acts. And then Golden State is just about to approve it as well. So.
Thank you. Just one question.
Sure.
When you said that the work products are owned by all the ISJ participants, does that mean the public would never see these work products unless everyone agreed?
No. All the work, once it's gone from a draft form to a public form, will be public information posted on the website, presented here. Even the model that underlies, the technical model, that will...
Did the parties to the ISJ each all agree to that? I mean, how did...
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
Cleith will probably be, just an estimate, half the cost of anybody else coming up and trying to do the same work product because they've been in the model.
Their history.
It's just they know the system.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions at this time? Okay, public comment on this item.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos, on this item, when the county took this county on a couple of weeks ago, I had to point it out to them, and I believe I got an agreement from their staff that the water from the wastewater project will be considered a new source of water, and that they should look at themselves a little bit differently what they've been doing with the ISJ, because they will become, according to the state of California, a water purveyor. But what I got from the board, and specifically the chair, I believe, was, well, we always thought that water from the wastewater project was the CSDs. But staff corrected him, not kind of hinted around, no, we are responsible. And so I think maybe that's something you should get cleared up in this process. Who does that water actually belong to? Everybody in the ISJ, the county, the CSD? And that would be probably something that should be looked at as part of the studies that are going on here with these monies. And that perhaps they should go a little step further than, especially the county, since they'll have perhaps the purview of that water, of trying to get grants for water reuse that are available. As it stands right now, they're treating it as a discharge, basically, and wasting it on spray fields, perhaps. We're not going to get any water back in lieu of anything we give to ag. And so maybe perhaps the ISJ or the people involved with the ISJ should look at how that water is going to be brought back into the community and reused, because, and the money is there in the state. I've looked at it, and the state will pay a large sum of it, not a large loan, but a grant to get you going, get you started. And that maybe if we go that route, we perhaps won't have to spend as much money on other sources of water. I'm just bringing that up is because we can't afford state water. Everybody knows that. Where's it going to come from? Okay, thank you.
Frank Cilio, Los Osos. I have a couple questions. And one is that I see the percentages that each participant is going to be paying, 20% for the county, the 39% for the LOCSD, and so on. But what I'm interested in, is there a dollar max amount? I see a percentage, but I haven't heard of there's a dollar. Like, could this be 100,000, 200, a million, 2 million? Because then when you start talking for this study, we're going to be paying for this. Everybody who has a water purveyor is going to be paying for this, except those people who don't have a water purveyor, and those are the people who use a third of our basin. And they should have some responsibility for the basin as the rest of us do. And I hope that is that question can be answered to tonight regarding, are they left out completely? They are no longer considered part of the settlement? So would you answer? There's those two questions. Thank you.
I don't know of a maximum amount that's been set, but each task has to be approved by our board as it comes up for funding. I do know that, and I think the first three tasks are coming to a total of 70,000, something like that. So each item gets approved individually. We're not approving all of the tasks that need to be accomplished under the ISJ right now. So in that sense, there's a spending control in that we have to approve item by item, but I don't think there's a maximum amount that we have estimated.
Mr. President, you said that correctly, that 1, 2, and 3 is 70,000. When we do the intertie discussion in a few weeks, that will be another task for 9,000 or something like that. We'll go task by task. And then there will be a cost at the end of task 1, 2, and 3. We'll be able to identify the cost of the whole program so we can budget for it, look to that second 218 and see what development share of it is, and we'll have those numbers.
One other nice feature that I think I heard from you, John, at one time, and you explained this, is that we came up with the percentages according to essentially the percentage of water customers that each of the purveyors has. But as each of the companies has a different number of undeveloped lots, when the developed lots come on, that percentage may change because the percentage of people served by the purveyors will change. We may have 39% of the customers in town right now, and it may be 33% in the future. And so the agreement has the flexibility to adjust that percentage even, which I thought was a pretty cool feature. And do you want to address the other issue about wells? Where do they fit in?
I think that we've addressed the wells on a number of occasions in the past. When we there's a long history behind this, but the reality of going after those folks that have wells and join them in the litigation, all of the purveyors felt was prohibitive as far as an expense goes. And we felt much more comfortable that we could achieve much more economically between the water customers that we have, the water customers of Golden State and the water customers of S&T, one of the benefits of having the county participate is that we are picking up some of the those folks that have private wells. But we, early on, through everybody's experience with groundwater adjudication, is bringing in private wells that pump very little of the water that the total production of the basin is, would have been financially unproductive. We're much better off economically where we're sitting right now. And that was the conclusion. And I think we went over that many times through the approval.
Water really does belong to all the people. And it would be a good idea if the people owned the water, all of it.
Director Sennett.
Maybe this is I'd like to direct this question to Mr. Seitz, but are water rights a property right?
You asked a question that probably most lawyers could write a blue book or 100 pages on, so it's not going to be a short answer. Basically, you can quantify water rights if you go through a complete groundwater adjudication and you end up with prescriptive rights, which means that you generally have a water right superior and quantifiable to other folks that may be drawing off the basin. As a general principle, the public does own the water. That's a hard question to answer because you think, okay, we're the public, we own the water. But that's not quite the way it looks at it. The state sees it as a resource that people have the right to pump for beneficial use. Within all of that, there are classifications of users, appropriators, and overliers. If you want to even get more technical about it, an overlying right is generally superior to an appropriative right unless there is a claim of prescription that is proven through the court. I don't know. I mean, that's the nuts and bolts of it right now. So right now, we did not – part of the basin management plan is to determine, hopefully, ultimately, the safe yield with the project online, the wastewater treatment project, and for the water purveyors to quantify and hopefully agree as to what the water entitlements are as to each water purveyor. Whether we ever get to that, we'll just have to wait and see. But that is one of the elements of the basin management plan.
You're right. I mean, even the experts' heads spin, I think, when you start talking water rights and who trumps who. Yes.
Go.
Yes. Go.
My name is Gwen Taylor, and I've asked this question time and time again, not only before this board, but also before the Board of Supervisors. And the question is that since S&T Water Company residents do not have any meters, are they going to be required to meter their residences so that there is a true count of how much water is being used by S&T Water Company? Since they have an intertie with Golden State and there is no additional land for Sunset Terrace to drill water lines for, or a well for additional water, where are we going to enforce conservation?
We did see some progress in that with the encouragement of the group. They applied for a grant to fund those water meters. So there's a willingness to move in that direction. They didn't have enough match. The people who were actually funded by that grant were doing 70% their dollars and only 30% grant dollars, which is not a very generous grant. All the people who asked for more grant, they got cut. So they didn't make the cut. but there was a willingness to pursue grant dollars to do that. We'd encourage them to continue to do that. I don't know if John has any comments about compelling them to do it, although we know it's a good idea.
I think we'd have a very difficult time unilaterally to compel S&T to set meters. However, I will tell you that the water conservation plan is part of the basin management plan. It's one of the elements that's in the ISJ. I think all of the water purveyors are working towards a resolution of that issue. The issue is not an issue that has been ignored by the ISJ group. It is an issue that has been, I would say, actively pursued and actively discussed on an ongoing basis. So it's not an issue that is sleeping in the woods. It's being actively pursued.
Thank you.
Hello, Alan Perlman, candidate. What I'd like to do is ask for a little bit further clarification from council and district engineer. I'm going to mention a few things that are. I believe that existing farmers, historically using farmers, which may not be a condition that isn't changeable, also farmers have many rights and should have many rights in this county. But I believe there's a fairly large amount of pumping that's associated with pumping at the outskirts of town, which happens to coincide with areas where the deep aquifer is closer to the surface. And so it's the deepest aquifer that's being tapped in that case. And for the most part, even I don't remember what percentage of potable water is in there, but that's the high-quality water that's getting mixed with phosphates and nitrates and applied to fields. So that's actually the water that doesn't have nitrates in it that is getting used. And there's a fairly large yield to specific things. And, of course, they have historic rights and as farmers, so there may not be much that can be done unless other sources are supplied to them. But what I'm and I know also that school districts have certain rights and are responsibly using or planning to or using existing wells or planning to use wells tapping into higher nitrate groundwater. But my question is, what is your understanding? Who is the granting authority as regards new permits for private users within the Level 3 declared area? Is it the county? And is there any information as to whether there's a change in county policy in granting?
Do you have some comments, Rob?
Yes, Mr. President, briefly. The county health department is the entity that you would go to pull a permit for a well, although it is our position that under certain conditions, for instance, the school district and maybe others' development interests, in order to permit a well, may also be subject to a land use permit, which we, of course, know. And that can be a difficult process getting through the Coastal Commission in the middle of a Level 3 severity determination. With respect to farmers, the capacity of that east side compartment, ag exchange, and how much water is really out there, those are all elements of those first three tasks, task two to be specific.
Thank you. Additional public comment.
Yes, I see that S&T is the only people that have a signature on this thing so far. I am also skeptical about Golden State Water. Have they kicked in their funds at all? As I understand, they hadn't paid their share of this, whatever you want to call this group at one point. The other thing is, back to the water conservation, which this is all about. Well, and one more thing, too, on that, S&T and Golden State. There is an inner hookup between Golden State and S&T because the saltwater intrusion is so close to the S&T well that it's questionable in the full use or full service of what they need. There must certainly be some kind of a meter between Golden State and S&T that we could somehow, or Golden State would know how much water they're furnishing to S&T. And if S&T's water bill from Golden State's anything like mine, it's going to triple in the third year from the PUC. So that should have something to do with conservation. Also, in a mutual company where everyone that owns a piece, a share in that mutual company, basically when they bought their home, they acquired a share in a mutual water company is the reason they have no meters and their water's furnished by the mutually owned company. Would not each of those members who own a share in that company be equally liable to pay for their own meter in this mutually owned water company as CSD furnishes meters for all of their people they purvey water to? So I believe that it could be forced judicially for them to put meters on their own mutually owned water company service lines. Thank you.
One point of clarification you might have missed earlier. The county did sign the agreement about 10 days ago.
It's not on this copy.
No, it's not on this copy.
Thank you.
Any additional public comment on consent calendar number item 6? Yes,
Mr. President, do you want just a few clarifying comments
yes,
on that?
Yes, please.
Just quickly, Golden State certainly does have a meter. S&T does.
$200,000 over the next 2 years. Anyway, that's the first question. And then the other question is, my understanding is these percentages were derived by the number of customers in each, by each of each purveyor. I wonder how much the percentages may have changed if you were doing it on production, because the CSD production has dropped dramatically in the last year and a half, as we talked about at the last meeting. And I would just be curious as to how that might break down, and if it's ever done that way. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Miller.
Mr. President, the reason the tasks are only $70,000 for our share is we did carve out some future tasks in hopes of funding those with dollars that come from the 218 vote, developer-funded dollars, not existing customer dollars, because those tasks benefit future development. So that's the reason for that change. And then with respect to the ISJ percentages, I wasn't involved in the determining of those. I thought those were production, not numbers of customers, although I think it would be instructive to see how that changes over time, because there is some flexibility there to look at that as time progresses. I know our use is down significantly.
Thank you.
Clarify. It is based on groundwater production as opposed, that's what the ISJ says, so it's not customers. And every 3 years it's recalculated. So I don't have the endorsed copy. The ISJ went into legal effect, I think about 4 weeks ago. So it does call for a recalculation.
My bad. Excuse me. I knew there was an opportunity to change that percentage, but I was wrong on what it was keyed to. Any further comment on consent calendar item number 6 tonight?
I think Golden State's going down too.
So. Yes.
Thank you, Chuck. Karen Vendetti. I just wanted to comment on a previous comment regarding S&T, and I know that this is a concern for all of us. Am I on the right page here? The concern that so many people have voiced around S&T is that it is not metered, and that some folks see that it is not the water is not being used wisely. I just wanted to comment that water conservation is going to become a concern for all of us. And the three water purveyors, I believe, are working together on some issues. I've spoken with some folks at S&T, and I believe that they understand the concern. We do not have agreement on how that concern is addressed. But in the future, I believe that the CSD's role as a water purveyor in water conservation as well as in cooperation with other water purveyors will be really key in solving how we best preserve our basin and the future of our water supply.
Thank you. Any additional public comment on consent calendar item number 6? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for comment. Anything else? Yes, Director Sparks.
I just have a question for staff.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Schicker?
Yes.
Director Sparks?
Yes.
Vice President Tacker?
Yes.
President Cesena?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll at this time go on to public hearing item A, which is conduct a protest hearing, consider the second reading and adoption of Ordinance 2008-01, increasing solid waste collection rates, and Resolution 2008-21, confirming compliance with the protest procedures of Section 6, Article 12D of the California Constitution, and reapproving rates and charges for commercial and residential collection and disposal of solid waste. Mr. Seitz, do you have anything to launch this?
Just a couple quick comments. During this public hearing process, this is the time for those folks that have not submitted protests, written protests that want to do so. This is the time to submit them. When the president closes the public hearing, the time to cast protests will have ended. So that's the number one thing I want to announce. Notwithstanding that, the board will hear public comment either in support or in opposition or neutral comments on the proposed rate increase for solid waste. I want to make a couple comments on the solid waste increase. We are following the provisions of the California Constitution, Article 13D, which is commonly known as Prop 218. If you hear that, we're talking about exactly the same thing. When staff prepared the ordinance for the agenda packet, quite frankly, we were relying on various things, and we later discovered, which I had thought was the thing all along, is that we had actually amended the ordinance when we originally introduced it. And the ordinance that is actually reflecting the board's action of June 5th is actually the one that's on the table before you and is the ordinance that is being presented for adoption. And there's copies of that ordinance, I believe, on the table up there. It does not vary the fee that is seeking to be confirmed through the protest. But as you may recall, at the introduction of that motion, ordinance, I requested that the board include a CPI clause in the ordinance. We included a CPI clause in our 45-day notice consistent with that. That is the major change that is in the ordinance that's before you as far as any financial issues. On the other hand, there is some good news. I think there's some good news, depending on future board action. We will be bringing back a new franchise agreement, probably at our next board meeting. We've sort of finished up the last tidbit of those negotiations, actually at about 5 o'clock today, before I came down to the meeting. That will be a 15-year agreement, and if it's approved, and that was taken on June 5th, so you do have the amended ordinance. It's consistent with the ordinance that you actually introduced. And, of course, we'd be happy to answer any questions and respond to public comment.
Anything from the board at this time?
Oh, just wait a minute. Yes. One more thing I should let the audience know is that we sent out approximately 6,019 notices of this public hearing and the protest procedures under Prop 218. And I think as of we sit right here today, the district has received 10 letters of protest. So.
Yes, Director Sennett.
I was just curious, the potential reduction in the franchise agreement rate, what does that do to? Can you give us an idea what the reduction was attributed to, or the what the potential savings will be caused by?
Well, I hate to, maybe I probably spoke out of turn by just announcing where we are on the contracts, but that has to be approved by the board. So we are just telling you that we have reached the final stage of negotiations as of today. Part of the 15-year contract is that there's this rate-setting methodology that's adopted by the city of San Luis Obispo that is used countywide for setting rates. It's a very it's a manual on solid waste rate setting. That rate setting has a CPI clause that is in there that sets the rate. Part of the incentive going to the 15-year agreement, which I think Tom would probably tell you, allows him to amortize his equipment over a longer period of time, and it's also conducive to the garbage company getting financing for their capital and providing the solid waste service. He's able to reduce their costs to our ratepayers by 1% of what they would otherwise need to pay or would be requested to pay in order to pay for the services. I hope Tom's in the audience. If I summarized that wrong, he can certainly correct me. He'll tell me, too, because he's not shy. But that's my interpretation of it. The rationale behind the decrease. And there's going to be several other benefits. I probably just opened my mouth way too soon just even mentioning the contract. Now I feel like I'm giving a staff report on the next meeting. But I wanted to say that the rates, even though the ratepayers have approved as much as 2.67, the likely result is if we approve the franchise agreement, well, there'll actually be a reduction from that 2.67. So I just wanted to bring good news, not a broad-based discussion on the existing contract negotiations.
Mr. Shipp?
I just want to point out that 2.67 includes the 0.5%, 0.5% that the solid waste folks gave us as a credit when they closed the office here.
September or next September?
September 1st through the 5th. 10 days from now?
Ooh, I'm going to be busy. any other comments from the public tonight on this issue? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for further discussion. Anything here?
Mr. President, just for the record, could you just make a last call for anyone that wants to submit protests so that it's clear that we've asked for the protests and there's no other protests?
Do I need to do a going once, going twice?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
This is your last chance to protest the proposed rate increase for the solid waste fees. Step up now or forever hold your peace. Thank you. We'll bring it back to the board now. Any further discussion here?
Question of
yes.
Mr. Schimpf, did you provide copies of those protest letters somewhere that I can read them?
Yes. We'll be glad to do that. We didn't do that heretofore because we didn't. I mean, we received one today,
right.
The last one, and we could have received more tonight.
Okay.
But yes, I have all 10 of them here, and I don't believe, Counselor, there's any reason why those are protected.
No.
So we'll be glad to provide those in next week's package,
like
if that'll be all right.
I would like to read them, yes.
Thank you.
If I'm not mistaken, is part of this rate increase to bump our franchise fee up to the average that other communities are charging? Is that was part of our discussion in the past?
This fee increase does not, and I want to repeat that, does not represent an increase in our current contract with and our ordinances with for franchise fees. It is true in one respect that as prices go up, especially by CPI clause, that we will, in essence, get 10% of our franchise fees that we will collect as a result of the 2.7% rate increase will rise a little bit, but it's going to be incremental and it's going to be small. But there is nothing in here that renegotiates our existing franchise fee agreement with Mission Country Disposal, Inc.
We're still a little bit below the rest of the communities.
If I'm Tom, we can.
A year ago, you raised your franchise fee to 10%, and that matches virtually everybody in the county except for Pismo and Cambria.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify the fact that, and there's been some chatter about Los Osos raising fees to cover legal costs again. We fought pretty long and hard to keep those franchise fees down below the average that most community service districts charge in this county. And the cost of gas and everything else, sooner or later, everything goes up.
And during that time, your ratepayers for 3 years didn't have an increase in their rates.
Yeah. Thank you. Board direction?
Oh, Mr. President?
Yes.
Just one more thing. Because I know there's an ordinance and a resolution in your packet, but because of our revision of the ordinance, you no longer have to adopt a resolution.
Director Senate?
Yes.
Director Schicker?
Yes.
Director Sparks?
Yes.
Vice President Tacker?
Yes.
President Cecenia?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We will now move on to general action item B, the iBank Capital Projects update, including the South Bay Well construction. And Mr. Miller, are you going to be handling that tonight?
I will be.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I believe you have a copy of the PowerPoint presentation at your dais there so that you don't get a neck problem as you follow along. Tonight we'll be doing essentially three things. We'll be talking about an overall update for the iBank. We'll be talking about the approval of a contract for the South Bay Well construction and the associated construction management services. And we'll just give a very brief update into the goals for capital improvements this year so you can get the full picture of your water system goals for the year. First, a brief overview of the iBank program. This is a discussion item which we last had on May 15th. It's a low-interest loan. We've been working on this for quite some time, since even before 2004, but the official start date was in September of 2004, and that loan agreement expires in January of 2009, and we'll have the construction projects done well before then. To remind the community of the program goals, number one was to increase fire flow and pressure. Sounds trite, however, it's very important. We have many areas in the community that can't even get the minimum fire flow required, and therefore, when you go to do a remodel on your house, if you add more than, I think, 100 square feet, you actually have to sprinkler your house. It's a big deal, and it's going to affect many of our customers. It will also allow us to have a more effective inner tie with Golden State, who operates at a higher pressure, and so we'll kill two birds with one stone there. We're addressing seismic and life safety issues at our main water tanks and at the Palisades Well. Some of that is a leftover from the San Simeon earthquake. We replaced many faulty water services, resulting in a decrease in our unaccounted for water and elimination of a very large potential for emergency conditions. Five major projects are underway, and we are going to show you a map tonight so you can get your bearings. The first contract is for work at the 16th Street tank, and that's both the coating of the tank and the completion of a water pumping station that increases the pressure to many of your users and increases the available fire flow to those users as well. The status of that, it's about 70% done. Very pleased tonight to report that the pumps have shipped, and I believe the big ones arrived today. The main pumps arrived several days ago. So the concern that we'd have a long-term delay that was ongoing for the pumps has finally been addressed, which we really wanted to be able to say this evening. Contract two is a pipeline project needed to convey the large fire flows into the community. That's substantially complete. Contract three 9th Street in Los Olivos. That project is completed. Another pipeline project. Number four, we'll talk about this in more detail, but that we have two additional pipeline contracts as shown. The little blue dots throughout the community are valve stations, automated valve stations that control the two zones that you now have within the community. If you live to the right of those blue dots, you're in the high pressure zone. To the left, you're in the low pressure zone. And it's because you don't need to be in the high pressure zone. Transitioning to the upper aquifer well at South Bay, and we're going to come back to the program as a whole, that well is basically designed to eliminate a lot of the water use from the lower aquifer that's associated with the South Bay production. It's not a huge producer. It's 75 GPM. But when you look at continuous use, there's a potential for 80, 100 acre feet of use just from that one well alone, enough water to serve, you know, over 400 homes. So it's not a drop in the bucket. It's a significant water supply, an upper aquifer water supply. We will blend it with the other South Bay well to produce water for our customers. It was designed in May, and we had a bid opening on July 25th. Fortunately, we did receive three bids, two of them responsive, one that was a little bit late, but deemed non-responsive, and the low bidder was R. Baker, who's been successful for several other projects for $102,000, which was under the engineer's estimate for the project. Also wanted to note that we're in a good economy for a lot of these bidding processes. They've all been under the engineer's estimates in terms of the low bids, so that's something that we've definitely been enjoying in Los Osos. We did, in order to look at some funding savings, we did complete some value engineering, particularly looking at some of the control valves and associated pipelines. We were able to get the project cost down to $70,000. Baker has agreed to that and are prepared to accept a not-to-exceed contract for $70,000. That's going to become important later on in the presentation as, of course, at the end of any very large project with very low contingencies, which this one had, we end up having to save dollars at the end in order to complete the program on budget, which we are committed to do. The other thing that we've done is cut the construction management fees from $25,000 down to $10,000, again, for a not-to-exceed contract on that. Now on to the wider program. In May of this year, there was a broad discussion of the IBANC, and the board approved a number of contract change orders, essentially giving staff the ability to award contract changes up to $115,000. To date, there hasn't been many signed change orders. Most of them have been actually deductive, things that actually saved us money. But there's a lot of pending or potential change orders that are waiting to be executed in about $206,000. When you subtract the deductive change orders, you come up with a net of about $203,000. So tonight we're before you asking for that additional funding authorization to be able to execute those necessary change orders. Categorizing these change orders is important, both for assessing the competency of the design professional and the CM team. In terms of field changes, those are those clarifications on the plans that result in cost increases. They've been very minimal. A lot of them have been actually primarily to the special type of lids that they required in our valve stations. They wanted to see manholes, not a normal opening hatch. And there were other permitting changes. But again, as a percentage, a very small percentage of the overall contract. The paving changes are more substantial. I've done many pipeline projects on county streets over the years, and historically, you were looking at repaving the trench itself, maybe a 2-foot-wide trench, 30-inch-wide trench, and the county's becoming increasingly concerned with trench behavior over time, and we've all driven over settled trenches, and they've basically required you to go, in some cases, to the middle of the wheel path as opposed to in the wheel path, all the way over to the edge. So you end up, instead of a nice, clean, 2-foot-wide trench, as you drive through it, I'm sure you'll notice, you get a whole lane paved here in many areas. Again, those are areas that the county directs in the field based on what they see, based on their requirements and how they apply them. I understand that as a board process, it's always not ideal to come back after the work is complete and say, hey, we need this additional money, even though we're in within budget. But understand that these are things that do occur in the field, and if you hold them up for discussion, you end up with a delay situation on the contractor. So we don't think these requirements, even though we don't like them, we don't think they're unreasonable. Of course, on the wastewater project, we ended up having to go full-width restoration on much of the community, and that wasn't the case here. But we did end up with a much wider trench, and therefore the cost increase. But still, as a percentage of construction, it's within what you'd expect on a large capital project like this. The county storm drain project, this is something that we were able to do with iBank funds, and it's fortunate because you would have had to use district general water enterprise funds in order to affect a storm drain project, which is sorely needed in LOVR near 9th Street. The district's required to move their water main at its expense, and we were able to do that, size that up for the ultimate plan for that reach of water main, provide better service to the Palisades well, and get it all done and prepared for that county storm drain project, and use the low interest funds and not try to find a way to fund it with higher interest bond dollars or with reserve dollars. A little bit more on the change order update. In the May 15th board meeting, you approved a number of change orders and gave staff the authority to spend up to $115,000. Tonight, we're asking you, because we are able to sign all the change orders with the exception of one with your previous approval, and that one is the paving change order for decal on contract two for $105,000. I do want to note that this particular lump sum dollar amount is at the competitively bid contract price that was in the original contract. So they didn't have carte blanche to charge whatever they wanted after they were done. That was the competitively bid contract price, which is actually underneath our engineer's estimate. However, we did note, because the quantity increased, it was our position that they'll get some economy of scale out of that. And so we have negotiated with DECAL, and those negotiations are near completion. But I can tell you that tonight we won't be out in the streets, subject to a lot of the county encroachment issues that we have been in the past. All the pave-outs done. We're still working on the booster station, but again, that's on a defined site. So we believe we'll be able to bring this project within the amount, but several months of construction are remaining in the two contracts. It'd be, I think, a more complete discussion tonight if we looked ahead a little bit and talked about the budget that you approved a few weeks ago for 08-09. We do have a capital outlay budget of $62,500 that's unallocated that may be used for an intertie project, could be used for additional iBank dollars if you needed it. We don't believe you'll need it. We have funded, of course, the ISJ activities that you talked about this evening. Consultant services and $75,000, including a rate study, $30,000 to $35,000 of that. And then a capital reserve fund, which would be both for capital and for emergency. So if you are going to spend that, we'd like to see that perhaps wait until near the end of the fiscal year to make sure you don't need it for replacing a pump or some other capital reserve issue. But in conclusion, there is some funding for additional adjustments if they become necessary. However, we don't believe they'll be necessary. Goals for this fiscal year: obviously, complete the iBank projects by January. Now that the pumps are on site, we feel confident that we can do that. The well project, we want to, if we can get that approved tonight, proceed quickly on that and have that done before October 15, at least the substance of the pipeline work. There may be some controls work that lags that. We want to be out of snail habitat by October 15. We want to complete the purveyor group studies, as we previously discussed. We want to implement a jointly funded intertie project. I don't want to give a staff report on a future agenda item, as John mentioned, but we will be talking about that in a few weeks. We weren't quite ready to bring the memorandum of understanding here tonight because Golden State just got that approved, but we'll bring that back for a subsequent meeting for approval of the design, and our share will be about $9,300. Future construction costs will be determined after design's complete, but it's probably in the range of 60 to 90. We'll try to keep it on the low end of that range. So an overview of our recommendations. The first is to approve a construction contract with Arbaker Incorporated for our upper aquifer well in an amount not to exceed $70,000. Again, that's after value engineering. To approve a construction management contract with Wallace Group not to exceed $10,000. Again, that's reduced from the $25,000 that we programmed. And I'll probably leave the room so as not to participate in that discussion when you get to that item specifically. And then authorize district staff to approve contract change orders in the amount of $105,000 to meet the county field changes. And that will, again, keep us within the $5 million IBANC budget as is addressed in your staff report. And I'd be happy to answer the questions that you have and also questions from the public.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. First, I want to clarify something. Now, so all of our residential zones have their hydrostatic pressure boosted to a point where we're comfortable, we're good, we have high pressure, as high as we need everywhere in town?
All of our customers will have adequate pressure and fire flow.
Okay. You made some comment about sprinklers being required big projects, and sprinklers are required down there. So
within our service area.
You're right. I'm
that's
in
Golden
State. Thank you.
But we'll handle our own customers and get the 1,000 GPM up.
Okay. Next question. Were the plans run through the county prior to starting these projects? In other words, we had feedback from them about limits of paving we were going to be expected to do, and then during the course of construction, they changed their mind about the amount of paving they wanted upon completion of the work? Is that what you're telling me?
We provide courtesy copies to the county because they operate the roads out here. Some things can't be determined in a plan check. It's not until they could be if someone did a very detailed walk. Right. You know, you get out in the field and say, well, you know, you're too close to the wheel path. You know, you're too close to the edge of the road. Keep going. Some things they can catch in plan check. A lot of things have to be field calls. And so it's similar to what we did when we had to repave some of the sewer projects. We had an inspector out there every day making a call based on what he saw. And so certainly some things were changed possibly after the project was bid, but before, you know, the contractor pulls the encroachment permit. Before that encroachment permit was actually issued where we could address them prior to construction. But many of these things are field changes that are required.
I guess the bottom line is that's one way to get the county to have our streets paved.
You know, we do have some more black areas. I think when we do the intertie project, we'll have a better feel for exactly what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Be able to budget those more closely.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board? Okay, at this time, we can take public comment. Let's see, we've covered B1, 2, and 3, essentially. Okay, public comment on item B, general action item B.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the completion of the upper aquifer production well for the purveyors. As I understood, originally there were two upper aquifer wells to be drilled, and we had only money enough to put one in because we had to pay for it before we could get reimbursed. It has to be in service, and then the other well could be drilled. My question is, are we going to be able to get that other well in by January 09, or will we still have IBANC money coming to do that? Or reimburse us for the money we put into that if we can afford to put money into that redraw. The other thing is in upper aquifer wells, the school board wanted to put a well in to do their landscaping. Also, couldn't they use upper aquifer water in all of those schools for toilet flush and toilet and urinary flush on upper aquifer water? Thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Miller.
In answer to Bruce's question, the only upper aquifer well we're going to be able to fund with IBANC is the One South Bay well. We do have a task under the ISJ to fully look at the potential of the upper aquifer production potential, and that goes to, you know, wheeling water.
Hello, Alan Perlman, Prohibition Zone candidate. I believe that the sprinkler system, which are fire suppression, require installation in new construction, and I think the criteria that activates it is any remodel, completely new construction, but in remodels, the threshold is 1,000 square feet, I believe. And that's a fire code, the new fire code, which was actually presented here. And I have to say that LOCAC, Land Use Committee, has seen, I predicted that we would probably see more construction in the 970 square feet rather than 1,050. And I one data point really shouldn't qualify, but so far that's what I've seen. Well, in other words, as the cost increases, people will build slightly smaller to the threshold. Nothing wrong with that. With regard to the pressure, though, people have been experiencing failure of their older water heaters, and I think that came up in a previous meeting, and I'm asking if there's been some expansion of notification, specifically, say, through actual door hangers, and I'm not suggesting expenditures, but door handlers in those areas as they begin to experience larger pressure, just notifying people to watch out. There are potential leaks that can happen, and people might not be aware of that and go off on extended vacations and such and experience more damage. It's not the water purveyor's fault that older systems will fail as pressures are brought up to meet codes, but it might be helpful for some people to know, and if someone can comment if that notification takes place. County storm drains. It's interesting that there's, I think it's great that that there's no additional creation of potholes, but as far as black, seeing more black on a tarmac, the segment between 9th Street and Palisades and LOVR will be revisited by the county very soon as they regrade and install storm drains. Therefore, they are going to pull up that entire section, along with the very neatly placed. So if you could comment on that, being that, of course, you're required to repaint crosswalks, et cetera. Thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Miller.
And just to quickly clarify on the sprinkler issue, I believe, and Vice President Tacker may be able to shed some light on this, that if you're above 100 square feet in those low fire flow areas, you're required to do sprinklers today.
That was the, I believe, Mr. Seitz might remember that. I think that was Mr. Chief Pickens.
Chief Pickens. It's there. So
but,
a lot of that burden overall, will be rainwater purveyor. You have to pave out the street after you're done, and they will come back eventually and do a lot of construction through there, and it's the nature of the business. I think John has something to add to that.
Yep. Yes, just a comment that the construction out here now is not ours. I mean, it's ironic that it's being done by Baker, but it is. We're out of there, and that all that's happening out here now between 9th Street and Palisades is nothing to do with the water district.
Did you say gas company? So it's not the county, it's not us, it's the gas company.
The gas company is required to move their
lines for the county's work.
One way
or another, we're going to leave you potholes every other week with new pavement in between. Yes, further public comment on this item.
Frank Casilio, I'd like to comment on Mr. Miller's discussion when he talked about eventually pumping from the upper aquifer and once they do their study. I don't know what's going to happen to the upper aquifer when the production wells or individual septic tanks are no longer used. Is there going to be a study about how the effects of all that removal of all that water that we're pumping into the upper aquifer and what effects that's going to have?
Mr. President, that's exactly what we want to know. That's task one.
you're ahead of the game. Good. Any other public comment on action item B, I believe this was? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Any further discussion here?
I wanted to ask Mr. Miller how the permitting process has gone with regard to that upper aquifer well at South Bay. I think you did say you would revisit that, and I haven't heard.
Perfect. I forgot to mention it. We got approval of the Planning Commission on that, and it has not been appealed. 5-0 on the Planning Commission, so we're through that process, which was taxing at times.
What was the date of that? The 7th?
Last week.
August 7th?
August 14th.
August 14th. Ooh, so there's another week for the appeal period. Should someone want to... Don't do that.
There was no protest at the hearing.
That's terrific. I wonder. And I was curious. Did the commissioners ask any questions? I'd be curious what their interests were.
I think the whole item took 15 minutes. It was a very quick, not a lot of discussion.
Excellent. Okay.
Director Sparks.
Mr. Miller, on contract number one, do you know when the expected sound tests are going to occur?
Say that one more time.
On contract number one, do you know when the expected... Won't there be sound tests associated with contract one? And do you know
Yes. After, you know, the generator right now is sitting in the middle of the street, but once they get that in place, they should have substantial completion of that project the end of September, and then we'll be able to sound test that generator at the property line as soon as we do startup. So early October. My belief, having operated and worked on several of those generators, is that it's likely to not result in any additional sound.
Heard something recently, then perhaps it is not.
Okay, I'll check with my source. No. Thank you. Not fixed. Okay. Yeah, that's been weeks ago we asked the contractor about it, and I do know how long it takes sometimes because that's certainly not his high priority. Any board action that's desired?
I guess a question, a clarification. Yes. We're doing three separate approvals, right? And so we're going to approve, we want to talk about Wallace's contract. So how do you want to approach this?
If you want to talk about our contract, we'd love to recuse myself if you.
Yes, that would be appropriate. Thank you.
Just point of clarification. I'll wait.
Yeah, when are we going to have that cone of silence installed? Okay. Yes.
Mr. Schimpf, on the budget in line item 400 for program management is $204,000. And in the staff report, the Wallace Group's current contract is $324,884. And I guess, can you explain the difference?
No.
And does the $204,000 and or the $324,000 include the $45,000 additional approved in May?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Okay. And do we know Wallace's expenses since we approved the change order to Wallace's contract in May? We've run now June and July.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
The amount of expenses from Wallace in June and July since we approved the change order in May.
Don't know.
Okay. I guess... I need a moment. since I don't have answers to those questions. I guess without those, I'm not ready to approve a change order to the Wallace contract.
Director Tacker, did you have a question?
I actually thought I'd make a motion to approve the construction contract with R. Baker for the value engineering for the equipping of the South Bay Upper Aquifer well, not to exceed $70,000.
Do we do these one at a time? Can we do them all three at once, one at a time?
Well, I think it's for the discretion of the chair, but since Director Sparks has already said he's...
Unusual questions or anything that should maybe put him...
I don't know. That's fine with me. I mean, the other alternative is to... If you want to have Mr. Miller return
That's what I'm after. Get those answers, and then maybe we can deal with the contracts. Because it doesn't seem like we're going to move B1, much less B2, without those answers. Yes, would you please have Mr. Miller rejoin us? But I was wondering, others from Wallace, maybe? Okay. Thank you, Rob. There were some questions Director Sparks had regarding your contract and the expenditures in June and July, and I'll let you go ahead and ask them again.
Sure. Yeah, number one, the staff report that we have has the Wallace contract for $325,000 roughly, and the budget in the, or the awarded expenses for $204,000 in Table 1. And so I'm wondering, I don't recall what the discrepancy is due to. Can you explain that?
Yeah. Carrie probably has the most intimate knowledge of that. Which line are you on?
I'm on the awarded expenses are item 400 in Table 1 of the staff report, and then the contract amount mentioned is in the second page of the staff report.
Carrie?
So you're asking specifically that the 325 to answer your questions, the 329,000 or... roughly yeah. Whatever that number is, that does include the $45,000 change order that you have, that you approved at that meeting, at the May meeting. So that does include that. The $204,000 that has been spent, that is for program management money that we have spent. The remaining money has been actually delegated as program management up in other contracts. So you don't see it in that line item, but the money has been spent in other contracts in program management.
Thank you, Carrie.
So fees to date, actual spent for Wallace Group is rounding the just over $300,000, $310,000 range, somewhere in there. It's tied up in other contracts, and so you can't actually see it pulled out in that spreadsheet that you have in front of you.
And maybe if I could, Carrie, just briefly, Director Sparks, we did recently check our budget availability for all the contracts that have been authorized, and I think we had a little less than 10,000 left, enough to finish. All of the consultants that are committed to the project will complete the job within the available budget remaining, even if we end up eating a little time at the end. So... with the exception of the increased scope of work that we're proposing tonight, which is for the South Bay construction management, which is not in any of our other contracts, we're going to finish within our allocated budget and won't be back for any future increases.
So again, you're saying there's... What was the amount that you had left?
IBANC budget status budget is did not include the Wallace Group contract or the Wallace Group... our bill for the last couple of months, the disbursement request to IBANC had not included the last couple months' worth of work. So you'll see that in the next status update. You'll see the next bills for Wallace Group.
Thanks, okay. Carrie.
So just for my clarification, in May, we had awarded $160,000. We increased that by 45,000 to 204,000.
Wallace Group's overall contract right now is 329,000 for program management.
Okay. So it's okay. You have program management within the other. You have program management within construction management.
We have program management for specifically, that's the overall program management that's dealing with the disbursements requests, and then we have program management for within each of the specific contracts themselves. That is grouped up with the other contracts for contracts 9, 10, 11, 12.
Okay, thanks.
So they're included in those other contracts.
Thanks, Carrie.
Okay, I believe there's a motion. Did we get a motion? Yes, we did through on B1. We had a second. Could we have a roll call, please, Ms. Kudart?
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Shipper?
Yes.
Director Sparks? It's on.
You can vote on.
All right. Sorry. Director Sennett? Director Schicker?
Yes.
Director Sparks?
I'm going to vote no.
Vice President Tacker?
Yes.
President Cecenia?
Yes. Okay, do we have any further discussion on item B2?
I'll move we approve the amendment of item amendment 2 is what it's called to the program Wallace Group program management contract for the construction management of the South Bay Aquifer Well in an amount not to exceed $10,000.
Second.
A roll call, please, Ms. Kudart.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Schicker?
Yes.
Director Sparks?
No.
Vice President Tacker?
Yes.
President Cecenia? Thank you.
Okay, on to item B3, authorized approval of pending contract change order paving to meet County of San Luis Obispo field changes for contract number 2 in the amount of $105,000.
Move to approve.
Second. And my discussion is that it seems strange to me that we wouldn't have known about this one. I know there's contract changes in the field, but it seems like the rules were changed on us, and that's disappointing. And it sounds like, Mr. Miller, you said you've done plenty of county roads, so you would have known what it usually costs. You wouldn't have been that far up.
You still need to hear. Okay, Director Sparks, do you have any comments on item 5?
Yeah, number one, again, we've got some legal bills coming in late. They're at 3 months at a time. We have that with Sullivan. Another item, I'm not inclined, again, to approve these. I've had requests that the district get information when it gets referenced in invoice, and I think whether or not the board feels that the district should have it, but I think as a routine matter, at least our general manager should have it. And so I think until that happens, I don't want to approve these. I do have another concern with the...
Mr. Sparks, before you go on, I couldn't hear you. What did you say that you think they should have that they don't have and why you don't like to approve these?
Oh. Well, as you know, I've requested that there's on invoices, there's certain references on correspondence that I believe at a minimum the general manager of the district should have. You know, we're a public entity, so the district should have this in its possession. I think it's a routine thing, and that doesn't happen. So I think that should happen, and it hasn't happened. So the district doesn't have that information. So normally, in correspondence with a general manager and a legal counsel, the district would have that. So that's I think I've stated that previously. I'm restating it. There's another item I have a concern with. I don't know if I can express it adequately on the looking for the firm here. In terms of concern of this is with the Onstott's firm and with work subcontracted, my concern that certain expenses potentially subcontracted were either duplicative or might have been duplicative services. So that's my concern there.
I had some concerns with the warrants myself, and I won't be approving them for the mileage reimbursements to General Manager Shimp.
Okay, any other board comments before we ask for public comment tonight? Okay, let's hear from the public. Yes, Director Sennett.
I really am having trouble understanding Joe's request and his comments concerning the warrants, and maybe
even our own previous attorneys, on our own staff, we get very little on paper for the advice they do. The quote from one of them was, "You're getting 30 years of legal experience. That's what you're getting," and it's, you know, it doesn't show up on a piece of paper.
Can I help a little bit?
Yes, Director.
Director Sparks doesn't need an interpreter, but I feel like not everyone's understanding what he's asking for. When an invoice references a correspondence that the attorney is charging us to read or investigate, he wants to see that correspondence. And I don't think that's unreasonable either. So Did I adequately
close,
state
but
that?
Not adequately. I'm not even necessarily asking that I see it. I'm just asking that the district, at least the general manager, Mr. Schimpf is actually right. When he confers with a lawyer, the district has a record because he's a member of the district, and so that's and if say a director corresponds with a lawyer, if there's a correspondence, then the district has that. That's, I mean, certainly I have no problem with anything I've ever written. I'd have no problem with anything I've ever written to the general manager or an attorney, you know, being made available. I never have. I have no problem having it made available to the general public.
Does that help you? Okay, great. Okay, public comment.
Richard Margetson, page 4, check number 17306, the Schindler Law Firm. Is that the one that's working on the insurance thing with you on the taxpayer watch defense? Okay. The next page, page 5, check number 1713, about 5 down. Those are for legal fees through 430 and 531, but they were paid in July. Are they being expensed back into last year?
Yes.
Okay. So that would be the same for 17340 at the bottom of the page for software optimization specialist, or is that being expensed in the current year? And is that, isn't that, that's Anna Jane, right?
It's for last year.
My question on that one is, when were those invoices submitted, approximately?
After the end of...
That's a lot of money to be paying for lawyers. Thank you.
Totally agree.
I'm not sure I understand Director Sparks' question, so if I'm misinterpreting it, I guess I'll get corrected. But I have a little experience about lawyers' statements and what the requirements are, et cetera. And for those of you who don't remember, I was once a member of the Board of Governors of the State Bar of California, so I do have some experience. And if the Director Sparks is asking to see the letter that the lawyer is referring to, that from the standpoint of careful litigation is not a good policy. It just isn't. Letters have a way of getting out and into the wrong hands, and problems occur. If that's his concern as to whether or not that work was done, then it seems to me that the board should designate probably the general manager to have a conversation with the lawyer that raises whatever concerns the board has. And I emphasize the board. This, otherwise, we have five people who will drive everyone in the action crazy. Lawyers are supposed to send bills which are understandable. If they're not understandable, the client has a right to get that explanation. But each one of you is not the client. It is the CSD that's the client, and it requires your action as a board to ask for that clarification. Otherwise, you're going to have chaos.
Martha Golden. I'm also a little bit curious about what it is that Mr. Sparks wants, because if it's a statement from the lawyers that is specific, in other words, review letter from Joe Blow, 0.2 hours on X date, and just with reference to a particular litigation, that's adequate specificity in a statement as required by the State Bar. Mr. Golden has already talked about, if you want the particular correspondence, maybe if the entire board wants a particular item of correspondence, the general manager should request that particular correspondence. It is customary and it is good practice if a lawyer has a communication that the lawyer believes the client needs to understand what is going on, to copy the client with that correspondence that the lawyer has generated. That's the client. In other words, it's sitting over there via the general manager and put in a file somewhere, the litigation file, or it's going to both Mr. Seitz or whoever the other lawyers are and the general manager. So I'm a little confused about it. Certainly you're entitled to very detailed itemization of all
that was to draw attention to the money we're spending on litigation. I bet you're not really specific to any one bill or one firm but just the fact that we're spending money on litigation. As Mr. Bearden pointed out, $49,000 in 1 month, I believe, or one period. But if you have somebody file against you, you have to answer it. Period. And if you have a company, per se, that was supposed to be paying for your litigation and they backed out, such as a certain insurance company, you go after them too. If you have a community group, who's not really a group, filing against you, and you spend $49,000 on that litigation, it's not the CSD's fault that money's being spent. It's the person who's filed the lawsuits. Could that have been, problems been taken care of outside the courts? Could somebody approach their CSD and said, how can we take care of this problem? Probably, but I don't think that was the intention. I think the intention is to, first of all, make this board and past boards since the recall look bad by bringing the fact up that there's litigation costing the CSD money. But the fact it really is, it's not costing any of these directors any money. It's costing the residents of the Los Osos Community Services District money. So when somebody stands up here and says, well, $49,000 was spent, yeah, it was spent all right because they had to answer that lawsuit. Are you hurting these individuals? Not really. You're hurting the CSD. Both as people, how people look at the CSD as well. All this litigation. You hurt the CSD. And you're not hurting the CSD as an entity, but the community at large as a whole.
Gwen Taylor, and to carry on a little bit further on Mr. Dugan's presentation, that being that we have had tremendous lawsuits and expenditures through Taxpayers Watch. If Taxpayers Watch were to drop their suits, much of this would be stopped now. We will continue to have to defend every lawsuit that is on the books, and that costs money. I don't care how you like it or how you don't like it. A fact is a fact that this CSD is going to have to defend themselves, not you yourself, period, but the community as an entity of the CSD. So remember when Mr. Bearden says that the lawsuits are costing us, and Mr. Sparks knows as well as anyone sitting on that board that it is costing the CSD and this community.
It's capable of abusing the civil rights of. To give you an idea of what some of that stuff is, we paid $6,000 for the record according to the water board, and it's taken hours upon hours upon hours to figure out what in the heck they put in and what they left out, and it's unbelievable. On top of that, the Attorney General, of course paid for by our tax dollars, is fighting us on our own civil rights, and they are putting lies into papers that they file in the court. They have said that my wife and I didn't get a CDO, we got a notice of violation. Well, we have a proposed CDO, and nobody who had a proposed CDO got a notice of violation, unless it was for a property that wasn't under the CDO that they owned. Thank you.
Okay, additional public comment on consent calendar item number 5, I think is where we were at. Yes. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board.
Yeah, just a brief comment. I think there's some excellent comments. And as I said, as a client, yes, as a CSD, as a client,
with the general manager, where we have entered a relationship, there's another client that the district have the records. That's basically all I'm asking for the client, and that the general manager would have it. In a normal relationship, the general manager corresponding, the district would have that. In this case, the district doesn't get that, it pays for. It would be a routine thing to have our general manager copy. So if us as a client doesn't want to do it, that's fine. That's not the way I would do. That's not the way I would do it, but I'm not the client.
I'm just wondering if there are specific letters that you have been. I mean, if there are things you want to see, maybe the rest of the board wants to see them too.
Well, no, this board does not want to, because actually, I first asked for this over a year ago, because we back entered into this, and so that was one of my concerns, because we were back entering into it. So frankly, I'm just not going to approve this warrant. You know, I felt like I should state why, not just say, hey, I'm going to vote no on it. But, you know, I know where it's going. But, you know, the board do what the board wants to do.
Okay. What does the board want to do? Yes, Mr. Seitz.
I know that there seems to be various directors with various issues regarding the warrants. So, without making a huge assumption that somebody will make a motion to approve the warrants and there'll be a second, then when you take the roll call vote, each director who is going to vote no on a specific warrant should enter that warrant number and the no vote into the record. You know, so you see how that kind of works?
A lot more of that tactic used in the future, because there's certain things that we all don't want to see.
Sure.
Thank you.
But the other thing is, I don't want to parse lawyers' fees or those types of things. You know, and I think, quite frankly, I haven't seen these lawyers' contracts that seem to be in contention. But in addition to what other public comment has been heard, I assume that there's a contract with these lawyers. Sort of keep in mind, and I don't know if there is or there isn't, but I just make an assumption that there is a contract and there is a contract obligation.
I just have a question because I've never not approved a warrant, but what's the repercussions of not approving a warrant since it's already been paid?
Let me just point out, it really... see how I can explain this. Not approving a warrant that's a legitimate warrant may be a breach of contract. So just that's one issue, and you subject yourself to possibly more legal battles until it's resolved. So that's clearly one issue that is there. Sometimes I don't look at all these warrants when I come to these meetings, so I don't spend a time on the warrant register, but I'm assuming that in most warrants there are such things as paying the normal operational bills of the district, PG&E, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you don't pay those bills, they turn you off. So that's an issue. Sometimes I don't know if you have your employees type warrants on here. You don't pay those. I guess the employees don't get paid. I mean, there's a lot of issues that go along with paying the warrant register. So typically the warrant register is on the consent agenda because you approve a budget, and the warrant register is supposed to be at least consistent with the budget that you've previously adopted. So there's a lot of issues of not approving the warrants in blanc. a lot of issues and I would not recommend, if it came to that, I would say let's go through each warrant item individually and make sure the ones that everybody's agreeing to pay get paid. Otherwise, you're asking for trouble.
What would happen if, say, a majority of the board didn't want to pay or had a protest and didn't want to approve a particular warrant?
Then I'm assuming that, first of all, I would say this. Instead of, if you had a specific warrant that you didn't want to approve, I would probably recommend that you continue that item to the next agenda and not disapprove it. Now, having said that, there can be contracts out there that say, you know, you're supposed to...
Well, we've done that before. Director Tacker.
Mr. Seitz, some of these warrants go back to the beginning of July. These checks have been cashed. They were signed by the general manager and another director. These checks have been cashed. Sure. So whether or not we approve or disapprove them as a board or push them off to next month really is insignificant.
Right.
What it says when the board doesn't agree with an expenditure is that we need to set some policy so that when something comes up that's in dispute, that we resolve it in a formal manner. And that's how I feel about my issues tonight. I have a problem continuing to reimburse mileage for General Manager Schimpf when the district owns a car that we went through great pain in this community to purchase for Mr. Buell, and it's underutilized now, and that's an issue for me. It hasn't been brought forward, and this is my little way to send a protest to the rest of the board that this is an issue for me and that we need to address it later, perhaps, in some policy. So that's all I see approving the warrants as doing, is approving the way that general business goes about as business. But when the board doesn't agree with how the business of the district's moving along, that's what I see an ability to change or make change.
Can I just make another suggestion? I mean, first of all, I'm not trying to preclude what you're stating there. But, you know, just put the warrant policies on an agenda so that, I mean, if that's an issue with the board, it seems to me that is the way to handle that, as opposed to, because there's never going to be a clear message to staff if you just pick one or two and say, I'm going to get in trouble here. I feel myself sinking in this hole. I don't have a shovel to dig myself back out of. So I'm going to stop there. But while my head is still breathing. But to me, that's the way to handle it. And by the way, the other thing I wanted to point out, even though I just said that, is that even if that was to be the action to do that, there shouldn't be an expectation at the next meeting that's going to be on the agenda, because that takes some staff presentation, you know, some time and effort to make all that happen.
Yeah, just one other brief comment on 1057. I want to make it clear my concern was not with Walsworth. It was with a sub that was part of the invoice.
Say that again. I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Director Schicker. With 1057, my concern wasn't with Walsworth as it was with a sub as part of an invoice.
It's hard to... I don't want to get into personnel issues.
Can we just schedule that for that discussion for a later agenda item? I mean, she's...
going to vote on it tonight. Give a reason, just like Joe did.
She did. Well, if it was the mileage reimbursement, isn't that the issue, or do you have others?
No, that's my issue.
She fully explained that, and it's been a topic that's been kicking around for several months, and so it will be a future agenda item. Yes, Director Senate.
I have another question for Mr. Seitz. Is the warrant register for information to the board, or is it something that statutorily must be approved?
It used to, it's both, really, and it's just more than just both. You know, under the new rendition or the latest version of the Community Service District law, warrants don't have to be approved by the board before they're being paid, as long as they're within the budget. That used to be always the thinking. Now it's codified. You know, I mean, it's right there. Some districts may run their district on a policy that you don't pay the bills until the warrants are approved. There's nothing that says you can't do that. The problem with doing that is that you are counting on administrative time, a large section of administrative time being built into single issues on the agenda. The third purpose, in my mind, of it is public information and information to the board on who's being paid what for what. You know, obviously, when you get to attorney's fees bills and you get to certain types of bills, there are issues that have been brought up in public comment about attorney-client privilege, and disclosing those to the public, of course, waives the attorney-client privilege, and there are issues that go along with that. But, you know, it's sort of a policy of the board. I'm just telling you that you're and most people follow that, is that the warrant register no longer represents payment. You know, as long as it's an item in the budget, it can be paid when due. And so,
well, if we wanted to be approving the warrants prior to payment, we could just have weekly meetings. Bad joke. Sorry.
Yeah.
You run the maybe the extra expense of not paying your bills on time if that's what you're trying to do.
Exactly. And we're all business people here, at least I am. I mean, everybody knows that if you get a bill and it gets timely paid, sometimes you get better service than if you get a bill and you wait for 45 days and pay it. The next time you call that person up for a service, you may get a slightly different response than what you got the first time.
May I make a motion to approve the warrants?
I'll second.
We'll need a roll call so that we can take accurate
discussion. So Director Schicker made a motion to approve all the warrants.
Fundamental action of approving the warrants that have already been dispersed is like approving water you've pumped out of the ground and served to people. You're approving it after it's done.
Well, it is a chance for people to express themselves about concerns, and maybe it's a chance for the board to identify recurring concerns. So we're going to let it go at this rate. John's explained it very well on how we need to approach this. So if you have particular warrants, sound off about them. Otherwise, we're going to do the roll call.
Mr. President,
yes.
One more clarification. The budget did not include certain legal expenses, and now we have certain legal expenses particularly for the other four board members are being asked to approve, and so hasn't been budgeted yet.
And so my point, I think that I was hoping that I was making there,
I think
is
I,
that
I think
if, this,
you were.
If this comes back up for a policy issue, maybe the policy is that you don't pay legal warrants until they're approved on the register, until they're approved on the warrant register. I mean, there's things that you can do, but, you know, that policy, as far as, you know, I just don't know what all quite frankly, and I don't even know if you have a policy on this. Most agencies don't. But there's no reason why you can't adopt a policy at some future meeting that says, all legal fees will be approved on the warrant register before they are paid. That if that's the policy of the board, then the lawyers are going to know, get those bills timely sent in. You know, we have to have a commitment that they're going to be on the warrant register within a certain amount of time. We're not going to sit back and let them fester, so to speak. But, I mean, you can adopt those policies. You can't adopt them now because it's not on the agenda, obviously, but it could be a future item.
Any further board discussion before we head into the roll call? Okay. Thank you, Ann.
Director Schicker?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I vote yes, except I vote no on 1056, South Bay Law Firm. All the rest I approve.
Director Sennett?
I make the same qualification with my approval as Director Schicker.
Director Sparks?
Yes, except for 17314. Yes, except for 17313. 17341, 1057, and 1056.
Vice President Tacker?
I vote to approve all the warrants except for 1056, 17338, 17365.
President Cicinia?
Yes, with the exception of 1056.
Just for the...
Yes, those funds are paid out of the money that's set aside in bankruptcy. They're not coming from the district funds right now, so it's not like we're deciding whether or not to pay them even. But when you see items on that bill being charged to the whole bankruptcy proceedings for the creditors committee attorney to be reviewing the county's tech memos for the sewer project, we don't understand the connection. So we just want some kind of a bold statement that that's not right. And actually, we've done more than that. So anyway, I think that concludes the agenda. I have a couple of announcements I want to make very quickly. The county has put out a notice that there is a wastewater treatment facilities field trip, the TAC, and the county project team and any members of the public who wish to go, Wednesday, September 3rd, leaving Los Osos about 7 a.m., returning about 7 p.m. We'll be traveling up to... let's see, does this even have... Stockton was one, and Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley, yeah. Scotts Valley, there it is, wastewater reclamation facility. That's near Santa Cruz. And then Discovery Bay solar sludge drying greenhouse near Stockton. If you want to go to those, talk to Gennaro Diaz at 781-5279. He's with County Public Works Department. Another item I want to call your attention to is a couple of events coming up on rainwater harvesting here at the South Bay Community Center on Tuesday, September 2nd, and then over in Morro Bay at the Vets Hall on the next night, Wednesday, September 3rd. There'll be a gentleman in town, Brad Lancaster. He's written books and got slideshows and all kinds of fun things about rainwater harvesting. Turning water scarcity into water abundance. This is another of those events sponsored by Slow Green Build and Surf Rider Sierra Club, and the NEP actually put out some grant money for this. I think the county's going to be there. A lot of groups sponsoring this one. That'll be another fun event here September 2nd, 6:30 to 9:30, or in Morro Bay, 6:30 to 9:30 on Wednesday. Any other announcements or closing comments? Are we going to visit closed session again? Do we need to do that? Okay, I think we've got it pretty well. We won't be doing that. So any other director's comments tonight?
Well, I'd like to say that the legal fees associated with Taxpayers Watch is a big concern to me. I think after the community halted and wanted to move the project, the statements that came out of various people
that they wanted to find the community out of existence and things like that. I think this lawsuit is a continuation of that effort. And I think, and with all due respect to the accrual statement, I think it's another attempt at doing that, finding the community out of existence, and it puts
all directors. And revenge is deep and all that, but it's a shame because you're hurting the public, you're hurting the community, and you're also hurting, because of the nature of the lawsuits, you're hurting the democratic process. That's my opinion. When you sue directors who are acting out their duties as directors, you hurt the democratic process. I have heard from many people who thought about running for election that aren't willing to take that risk in their own lives. To say, Mr. Dugan said a few things about how this board wasn't hurt by that lawsuit and the public was hurt more. He's right about the public being hurt more, but to think that we haven't been affected by this personally, come talk to us sometime if you think that's true. And come visit with me with my doctors or whatever you want. There's a lot to it that you don't see because, of course, we're not showing it up here. And that's kind of just my personal expression of how hurtful this has been for the district trying to survive and how hurtful it is to us who really believed that we were doing the will of the people. So thanks again, and see you soon. Bye.
Director Sparks, anything? Okay. Director Tackert.
I just wanted to talk briefly, sort of, it's election time again. I made a decision a couple of weeks ago not to run for the November election. And the last week's Bay News, there was a brief article. We had a lot longer discussion and a whole lot of other issues to talk about that were not printed. But one of the things, that was the August 14th edition, if you still have that laying around and are interested in some of the reasons why I've chosen not to run for re-election. But in it, there was an error, and in this week's Bay News, there is a correction. I just want the record to be clear, and that it was in reference to chipping days and the whole thing. The property in question belonged to a man named Charles Pratt. So there is a misstatement that it belonged to Jeff Edwards, and I want that to be on the record that the property belonged to Charles Pratt so that all is, that's over. But I do want to say that I have very much enjoyed being a director. I will continue to serve throughout my term, and I look forward to continuing to serve. I find everything, every aspect, every nuance of the CSD to be interesting and challenging, and I'm no lame duck. Let's just put it that way. I am still here and intend to work very hard throughout my term. So good luck to those of you running, and I'll be on that side of the podium come December. So thank you and good night.
And thank you all and good night. It's not even 10 o'clock.